Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself and reflect on these conversations. So this is very weird. I decided that I wanted to do a solo episode today as a reflection, I guess, on the year. And then also thinking about 2025 and kind of recovery and hopes and different things like that. And honestly, I have no idea really where I'm going to go with this, how long it's going to be or anything. But I really just wanted to chat and reflect on things, and I know that I do that a lot on Instagram and that people find that useful, so I hope that this episode is insightful and I hope it's as helpful for you as it is for me. I guess where to even start. See, this is a strange thing, isn't it? Because normally I'll say to people, oh, can you just introduce yourself? And hopefully, you know, if you're listening to this episode, you'll know who I am. But if you don't, I guess that's a great starting point. My name is Hannah, and I'm the host of Full of Beans podcast. And I've been in and out. Yes, Hannah, that's the word. I've been in and out of eating disorder recovery for 14 years, and genuinely this year, 2024, has been the year that I finally feel like I've come home in my body, and I feel safe in my body for the first time, and I have days where I'm like, oh shit, like, I like the way that my body looks. And sometimes that really takes me back. I'll look in the mirror and I'll be like, oh my god, wait, that's me? Oh my god, like, I like her figure. And I guess, like, my next goal or my next, like, step in this journey is getting to a point where I don't feel like my body image dictates how I feel, because definitely, you know, I'm still in a place where I'm bloated and feel fat, therefore I have a bad day, or, you know, I feel lean, I feel skinny, and I have a good day, and that's definitely somewhere I want to grow out of. But that being said, the change I've experienced this past year has been pretty astronomical. And I think, you know, if you'll have listened to the podcast, especially if you've listened to it for the past 3 years or what have you, you will have seen me go from, you know, doing pretty well in life, or seeming so from the outside. And I definitely was in a state of quasi-recovery. You know, there was so much restriction still going on. And I think it can be so difficult to vocalize that when you want everyone to think that you're doing well. You want to be doing well, but equally, you, for some reason or other, can't let go of the eating disorder. And I think one of the biggest things in my recovery was really understanding where I needed to let go, or like what the purpose of the eating disorder was that meant that I couldn't let go. And, you know, last year, so talking 2023, was when I was at my worst. And I think I was going through so much internally of, you know, being a certain age, but like, you know, becoming a woman, there being more pressure. There'd been troubles in my relationship as well. And I think as the person that I am very emotional. I take everything on board. And so I was just storing up all of this stuff, and internally was screaming, I can't cope with this anymore. And so the eating disorder just felt like it provided the answer. And I genuinely remember saying, like, I'll never go back to the eating disorder. Like, I'll never get that small again. It's not possible. And I think that's a really important thing to say is, you know, just because you think it's not possible doesn't mean that it isn't. And I always had that sort of protective layer over myself of, like, there's no way I could go back to that low weight. That wouldn't be, like, physically, like, physiologically, it wouldn't be possible, and it totally was. So if you're thinking, like, oh, you know, quasi-recovery is fine because it keeps me in this safe space and, you know, I'm not going to fall back, just know that that's not necessarily the reality. And I don't want to, you know, be spreading harsh lies or harsh truths here, but I think it's important to not have that naivety. And I think another thing that I've definitely recognised, or that I look back on, is also I don't know. I was talking to this about this with a friend yesterday of like, you know, eating disorders are shit and you go through hell. But I am now one of the most self-aware people I've ever met in my life. And I do, I know I've just said I don't think that I could ever go back to the eating disorder. But I now actually, I think that even more, but not from the sense of like, oh, physiologically, it wouldn't be possible for me to get to that weight. It's like, I'm so self-aware. I know all the signs. And because I think I'm at a point now in life where like, things are looking up, there's a lot of good things going on, I'm seeing that like what that recovered life could look like, it's a very enticing to stay here. And I know that equally with that, you know, and I'm being harsh on myself and everyone in, that has ever struggled with an eating disorder, it's not a choice. It's not like you say, oh, you know, things are difficult, therefore I'm gonna dip into my eating disorder. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is that yes, it's very difficult, and eating disorder can sometimes provide the answer to lean into. However, I think because of being self-aware and knowing the signs, I'm hoping that I can catch that more. Whether or not that's absolute bollocks, who knows? But, you know, I think that that's one thing that this journey has taught me is when things start to get slippy, you know, learning new coping mechanisms. And that I think is what recovery is all about, isn't it? Is learning those behaviors, learning those difficult situations, and then learning how to support yourself so that you're not necessarily relying on others to spot the signs or to support you. Absolutely, they can help you, but you have to be the one to help yourself. And I think that I think a difficulty on why I got so sick and why I stayed sick for so long is, again, I did look sick. Like, when I look at myself now compared to how I was, I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, what, where is half of me? But in the world, I just appeared like a slim woman, you know, oh, not really a woman, a slim girl. And so it was glorified. And especially in the fitness community that I was in, that physique was glorified because I had abs. And I think the more that I starved myself, the more dedicated I became to the starvation and to the exercise. And therefore, I could push myself so much harder. You know, I was winning CrossFit competitions, for God's sake. And now that I'm more recovered and eating well and resting and stuff, I can't push myself as hard. And I think that's a difficult thing to navigate because you're like, oh, but the eating disorder put me in that frame of mind, but of where I was, you know, successful in those areas, but actually look at all the other things that I was unsuccessful in. You know, I nearly separated from Ben. I couldn't be the daughter that I wanted to be. I couldn't be the friend that I wanted. I lost a lot of friendships that some have been lost, and some I've like I've reached out to people and said, I'm so sorry, this is what's happened. And some people I have reconnected with, but it took a long time for them to regain my trust. And, you know, you might sit there and think, well, that's a shit friend if they couldn't stick with you. But ultimately, at the end of the day, and I say this to everyone, like, you have to put yourself first. And if you're in a situation where somebody else's behavior is negatively impacting you so much that, like, you know, they're too reliant on you or it's triggering you or what have you, you have to put yourself first, and you're not a bad person for that. So I absolutely do not think badly of any of my friends that needed to step away, needed to take time for themselves, couldn't be around me because, you know, one, probably wasn't the most fun, but that shouldn't be the main thing. But also, it's a very difficult thing. I've got friends that have struggled with eating disorders before, and so to see me like that was like a reminder of their past. It's quite traumatic to then see someone living through an experience that you've been through. But now on the flip side of that, you know, I'm so, because of the self-awareness and the things that I've learned about myself over the past year, I have so much more confidence in myself, and I am able to apologize to people and put my hands up and say, you know, I'm sorry that I wasn't here last year, but, you know, I had to take the time out for myself as well. And that's totally acceptable. You know, if you need to take time away from other people in your own recovery because they're not supportive for you or they trigger you, then equally know that that's okay. It works both ways. And fundamentally, you know, I always thought it was so selfish to focus on yourself and to do things for yourself. But if you don't do those things, then you cannot have your cup full enough to then support other people. And so actually, and this is something I've brought into my business as well, like, you know, supporting yourself is supporting other people. So if you do struggle with feeling selfish, then like hold on to that as well. And I think that's been one of the biggest things for me in this whole recovery process is realizing and maybe this was wrong of me to expect, but I knew that my parents would stick around. I'm their daughter. They weren't going to disown me for having an eating disorder. My partner, yes, we did nearly break up, but you know, that was more tangible because he has a deep love for me, we live together, da 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 da. But friends, you know, you don't get to spend a lot of time with your friends anyway. So if the only time that you're getting to spend with them, you don't really want to go, you're disengaged, you can't concentrate, you're panicking, you're worrying about food, your body, da da da. That's been one of the biggest and nicest things for me, is now being able to connect with my friends in the moment, not worry about food, going around to my friend's house and them offering me a cookie and being like, yeah, I'll have that. Or them cooking me dinner and not needing to know every single ingredient beforehand. And then even though I know the ingredients, the food coming out, and like picking the food apart or panicking about, oh, what are they going to think of me if I don't eat it? Are they going to be offended? And you know, skirting around the conversation of an eating disorder, but being desperate to bring up the conversation of an eating disorder because of the only thing that's going on in my life. Now there's so much, life is so much more full. There's so much to talk about with friends and family, and that's so lovely as well. You know, not that, you know, you only live to provide your family and friends with updates, but to be able to tell my grandma about the fact that I'm buying a house or my business is going successful, rather than her worrying every time she sees me that I'm a little bit less, has been really, really nice. And ultimately, I think the relationship that I have developed with myself has been so good, because obviously, you know, if you guys listen to this podcast, you will know that I was diagnosed with ADHD in April. And also when I had the assessment, they said, you're also autistic, but because you haven't paid for that, we can't diagnose you, which I think is a great phrase to summarize how the system works anyway. But learning those things about myself, literally, I don't want to sound dramatic, but it did change my life. You know, not that the diagnosis is essential, or that, you know, you need to have the diagnosis, or that you're defined by your labels or anything like that. But I think particularly as someone that is autistic ADHD, my emotions are so dysregulated. I'm such a people pleaser. I rely so much on the feedback from others and the way that people think about me and things like that. And I do struggle with things that, you know, random Joe Blogs walking down the street doesn't necessarily struggle with. And, you know, it's by understanding that I have ADHD, it's opened the doors up to be like, ah, that's why I struggle with that. It's not that I'm weak or pathetic or lazy or that I don't care or I'm not interested. It's that my brain is rewired in a different way, which in some respects is absolutely brilliant. In other respects, it means that I find things a struggle. And, you know, just a great example this week, I'm moving house tomorrow, which in itself is a lot. It's a big change, but it's exciting. But yesterday, my friend came around to do some admin together, and my phone was on 2%. My laptop was on like 5%. And I was trying to post something on a client's Instagram. My phone was about to die. I was like, I need my charger, but because I needed to get up to get my charger, that was a barrier. I was then trying to change my driving license, but my driving license wasn't right next to me, so I couldn't do it. And then I walked into the kitchen. I couldn't find my phone. And it's just me and my friend were laughing. This is all, by the way, whilst I'm sat there in my pajamas, my hoodie with a weighted blanket on and a hot water bottle. I think this is the thing, like, by understanding that I do have barriers and those barriers do restrict me from doing things, give me compassion for why I'm absolutely knackered at the end of the day. It's because I can't just do a task. I have to build myself up to get through those barriers as well. Anyway, completely gone off tangent, classic. But what I was basically trying to say from that is that understanding those things about me has really helped me with my eating disorder. So obviously, like, because I am a people pleaser and rely so much on other people, of course I care what other people think about my body. Of course I've tried to develop a body that is accepted by society so that I would be accepted by society, so that I would fit in, so that I would get praise. You know, I have so much energy, my brain is so chaotic that going to the gym helps me with that. And being able to understand that and then shift that into a way that was like, okay, rather than using this exercise as a punishment, this exercise, I'm now going to see it as a way that supports me to calm down, to feel regulated, to feel safe. And that's been so helpful, because it's also allowed me to not be ritualistic in the gym. And so when people come in that I'm friends with, I can speak to them, I can say hello to them. I'm not worried about, you know, not doing a set on time or what have you, because I don't know. It's so, I find it so difficult to explain. Like, I can explain all of these things in the way that's impacted me, but I'm like, but why is that important? Like, why couldn't I do that before? And I genuinely think it just comes back to the fact of, like, I just needed to give myself permission to breathe. And, you know, I say this sat here now as though I've got it all sorted out and that it's perfect and everything, and it's far from it. This week has been a clear sign to me that when things are not structured and in place and perfect, it is difficult. But also, you know, one thing I'm really grateful to myself for is that this time last year, if I was going through what I'm going through right now, God, I've not even mentioned the fact that I've launched a business this year and gone self-employed, which is a very stressful thing to do, by the way, especially the day that you get diagnosed with the neurodiversity. Anyway, yeah, if you told me last year that this year you will start your own business, be diagnosed with ADHD, move house, be absolutely flourishing in your relationship with Ben, you know, have pretty much done what you set out every single year to do as your New Year's resolution in terms of recover, I probably would have laughed in your face, because I think I was definitely at a point of giving up. But I think really being able to dig deeper, look inside myself, and just, it's so hard because I want this podcast, I want to be like, oh, you know, I did this thing and that's how I recovered. And I just don't think it's that simple. I think it takes resilience. It takes bravery. God damn, does it take bravery. I mean, every single day, waking up and facing your biggest fear, eating, looking in the mirror, putting on clothes, are they going to fit me the same that they did yesterday? You know, it's really tricky. And then also, as you start to get better, people, you know, physically you might look better, people do start to check in on you less, or they assume that you're doing better. So maybe they, you know, they start inviting you out all the time, which is fantastic and lovely. And don't get me wrong, you know, I'm a very sociable person. I love the fact that I hang out with my friends all the time now. But I definitely, when I first started recovering, I was like, oh, I'm cured now. I'm totally fine. Like, I'm loads better. I'm going to do everything. And like, burnout is a thing. Burnout is very real. Recovery burnout is so real. And, you know, make space for yourself in that, because it's totally okay. And yeah, this is absolutely something actually that I struggled with, was working out, when am I not doing this because my eating disorder doesn't want me to? And when am I not doing this because Hannah doesn't want to? And Jesus Christ, I could talk for hours about the understanding of, does my eating disorder want this or do I want this? And honestly, sometimes I still don't know. Sometimes I'm still very much like, oh, I'm not sure. Am I going to the gym right now because I want to, because it's programmed, because my eating disorder wants me to? Am I eating this right now? You know, even sometimes, let's say we'll have ice cream and I'm like, I don't know if I want to keep going, but if I don't keep going, am I letting the eating disorder win? And honestly, that all comes with time. You know, the more that I progress in this journey, the more I'm working out what's the eating disorder, what's me. And it's very hard to be honest with yourself, especially when you're doing something that feels so difficult. Like, you know, I remember saying to my therapist, you know, I'm doing really well in terms of the general day eating, but like, I still can't really go out for brunch and have what I want. Can we talk about it? And she was like, well, Hannah, we can talk about it until the cows come home, but realistically, you've just got to go and do it. And I remember sitting there thinking, well, bloody hell, that's so rude, but it's true. Whatever you want to achieve in recovery, you have got to just go and do it. You can talk about it for hours, days, months, years. And I've been talking about recovery for years. But until you actually go out and do it, you cannot feel the pain that you feel. You cannot, you know, take a pause, take a breath. You can't realize what's difficult for you. What you could think could be the most anxiety provoking thing actually could be super easy and it'd be completely different. But that's then when you take it to therapy and you discuss what you found hard and how you're going to navigate that next time. And then you go back next time and you do it again. And doing things over and over again feels so repetitive and so boring. And you probably be sat there with your head in your hands thinking, when is this going to get easier? When am I going to be able to walk into a shop, pick a cake and walk out? And honestly, like, I got to the point where I was like, I just don't think this is going to happen. But one thing that I tried to do myself, and, you know, it can be a bit depressing sometimes, is honestly, you're eating... By the way, I'm not editing this, so I'm sorry if there's loads of bloopers, but I cannot listen back to an episode of me rambling on. It will not go out if I do that. What was I saying? Oh gosh, I've completely lost my train of thought now. When you're recovering from an eating disorder, it's so, so difficult to step away from the eating disorder, and you will absolutely see it through rose-tinted glasses. You will think about the way that your body was quote-unquote better, that, you know... I can't even think about what would be better about an eating disorder. That is actually amazing that that is all that I can think of. Wow. Yeah, no, all I can think of is that my body would be smaller. Isn't that awesome? Because I know that if I'd have asked myself that, you know, a few months or so ago, there'd be a whole list of things. But now, literally, all I can say is that my body would be smaller. And I think, I don't know, don't quote me on this, but I think I might have just said that my body would be better. And I actually would go against that now. I would say that it would be smaller. But anyway, you may have some things in your mind that you think, oh, it was better because of this, that, and the other. And when you're in recovery, what's really important is reminding yourself of the really bad times. The really bad, difficult times. You know, those times where things just were not going your way, where you couldn't cope with the way that the eating disorder made you feel. And I know that that is a very difficult thing to remember. However, keeping hold of that and keeping hold of the influence that the eating disorder is having on your life is so important for your recovery. Because if all you think about is the good things that the eating disorder gives you, you are never going to want to step away from it. However, because I was holding on to those, not holding on to them as in like, you know, thinking about it 24/7, but when I'm sat at the dinner table and I do not want to eat my food, why am I doing this? Not necessarily thinking I'm doing this so that I'm going to be a better girlfriend, better daughter, da da da. I'm doing this so that I am not the version of myself that I was when I had my eating disorder, because she was a very sad person. She was not nice. She was not happy. She was not doing what she wanted to do in life. And reminding myself of that every time I wanted to slip back really helped me, because I think that I questioned, well, even if I recover, will I be a good daughter? Like, I don't actually know that. I have so much self-doubt that I don't know that. But I do, what I do know for a fact is that I was very sad when I was ill. And I don't want to go back to that sadness. I want to be happy. I want to be engaged with my friends. I want to be a good cat mum. I want to be a good daughter. I want to be a businesswoman. And that for me was a big thing, you know, going from corporate world to being self-employed. Like, I can't really have sick days. I can have sick days, but if I have sick days, the work's not getting done. If you have sick days when you're employed, that's okay. I mean, you might then be signed off ill when you have an eating disorder, and that could, you know, they can't fire you, but that won't make you feel good. I think trying to hold on to reasons you're wanting to recover, obviously for the future, but also for your past self that you want to improve and you don't want that in your life anymore. There's Topaz. And I think also I want to talk about the relationship aspect of things, because it isn't often spoken about. I haven't heard it spoken about a lot, and it was a big part of my year. In terms of the fact of, you know, when you struggle with an eating disorder, you are so dependent on somebody else, whether that's a parent, whether that's a friend, whether that's a partner. But ultimately, you're not in a position where you can look after yourself. And you're also not in a position where you can look after anyone else. And, you know, this year has been a tough year for Ben and I. And I think ultimately a lot of that came down to, one, since he's met me, I've had an eating disorder on and off because of being in quasi-recovery. And so, you know, he's had a lot of difficult times with that. There's a lot of difficult memories of me not being able to eat things or freaking out about food or what have you. And so even when I was then engaging in recovery, he was just taken back to those moments of me really struggling. And to develop and to build that trust again between the two of us was hard, because for him, how could he trust me when I had spent so long lying to him. Oh, I don't like that food. Oh, I'm not hungry. Oh, I'm going to stay home. I'll have dinner at home. And none of those things are happening. And, you know, he could smell it a mile off when we'd be out for food. Oh, I don't like that. Yes, you do, Hannah. You're just scared. And that constant, you know, I don't want to say lying, but it is lying. It's deceit. And that takes a toll. That takes a toll on your relationship. And equally, and I've had conversations with people about this on the podcast before, when there's a eating disorder in the relationship, you are in basically a three-way relationship. There is always the eating disorder in between the two of you. You know, if you're having sex, the eating disorder's there. It's not only there in terms of making you feel shit about your body and the voice in your head and distracting you, but it's physically in between you as well. And that was every experience that we had. The eating disorder was always there. It was always answering back to Ben, it was snapping, it was getting involved, it was making decisions. It was never the two of us making a joint decision. And so that made it really difficult. And I think that, you know, bless his soul, he got to a point where he was like, I don't want this anymore. I love you, but I don't love you with the eating disorder. And genuinely, I think that in concoction with being diagnosed with ADHD was the thing that was like, oh God, I've got to do this now. Like, I can't not. I'm at a point in life where I can't not. And I mean this in the nicest possible way, but sometimes I do think that you have to get to a point where you're like, this just can't go on anymore. Because I'd never had that. I'm not saying that an ultimatum, you know, is what it should be, but I'd never had an ultimatum where it was like, if you don't recover, you're going to lose something. You know, the biggest relationship I'd had in my life up until then was my parents. Yes, friends would come and go, but friends come and go in your life anyway. I love the saying, friends are for a season, a reason, or a lifetime. And it's so true. You know, I've had friendships that I've outgrown, or they've outgrown me, or I've had friendships that, you know, we've paused for a bit and then we've come back. So I don't think that the friendship thing was ever, I guess, a concern for me. You know, and that might sound really bad, but ultimately, like, yeah, I don't want to say that friends are dispensable, but this is the thing about an eating disorder, is that it makes you so insensitive to things like that. Like, oh, I lost a friend, yeah. Oh, I upset my mum, yeah. Oh, Ben's upset, cool. Like, I just didn't care. And so I think that it has to be something deep that gets you really deeply, like the fact that potentially I was going to lose Ben. I was like, oh my God, no, like, this is real now. And also, we'd had it so many times where, you know, we'd say, oh, we're going to break up or what have you, and it never felt real. This time felt legit. Like, this was, yeah, there's no going back after this. And so we started couples therapy, and I think it was really good, because I very much went in with the fact of, I do not want this to be eating disorder therapy. You know, I will mention it if it's relevant. It's to get in a mention. It's getting no more than that. It doesn't need to be involved in this. This is, you know, we can talk about things, but ultimately, the eating disorder needs to be out of this. The way that I acted in that situation, yes, I might have been influenced by my eating disorder, but Hannah acted in that way. And so I took full responsibility for my actions. I took full responsibility for everything that I'd done, you know, not blaming. It's so easy to be like, oh yeah, sorry, I did that. That was my eating disorder. Okay, yeah, maybe. And maybe the eating disorder made you feel really bad, but also you did it. And this episode is actually sounding so much harsher than what I wanted it to. I wanted it to be a lovely reflection on 2024. But I think the reality of it is that eating disorder recovery is really frigging tough. And if we keep floating around it saying, oh yes, it will, you know, the stars will align and you'll recover. I hate to say it, but it's not going to happen. And it needs graft, and it needs grit, and it needs a big support network, absolutely. But it has to come from you. And you know, you can spend years going back and forth, as I did. And if this episode can be anything, like, you know, please, maybe it will be a wake-up call of, it needs to happen, because there is a life waiting out there for you. You so deserve that life. You know, one thing I think about people with eating disorders is, you know, we are the strongest people, because to live with a voice like an eating disorder rent-free in your head permanently is so hard. And the fact that you still wake up every day, try to be your best, try to achieve everything that somebody, you know, without an eating disorder wouldn't even achieve, like, you are incredible. And I hate the fact that your incredibleness is being wasted on an eating disorder, whereas the potential could be put into other things. Like, I don't know what your hobbies are, but I've gone from having an eating disorder and that being my, you know, my biggest bloody achievement, to now launching a business and achieving what I wanted to achieve by 2025 in 6 months. Like, I'm not blowing my own trumpet here. I'm telling you what's possible if you just say, see you later to the eating disorder. And I don't want this to come across as dismissive. I don't want you to think, oh God, Hannah, she's lost the plot. She can't remember what it's like to have an eating disorder. No, I can completely remember what it's like to have an eating disorder. I know how hard it is, but I can also see life from another perspective now. And I want you to have this. I want you to be able to experience all the things that you want to experience. I want you to travel. I want you to love your family. I want you to have relationships. I want you to do stupid things. I want you to dance in the street with your best friend because you don't care about what anyone else thinks of you. I want you to find out things about yourself that you've never understood before. Like, I want you to go to the next level of life, because the dedication, determination and passion you have to give to an eating disorder is immense. And if you could put that into something that is going to open up your life, like, I can't even tell you the extent of things that you could achieve. And so I really do want that for you, and you so deserve it. Sometimes I think you can sit there and think, oh well, I don't deserve this, I'm a bad person. You're not. That is your eating sort of talking. You are friggin' incredible. You have so much passion, so much love, so much care inside of you, and you so deserve this. So I'm gonna finish there because I cannot believe that I've waffled on for 31 minutes. However, I have. I hope this has been useful. I hope this came across the right way. I've said this since I started the podcast, but I just want to do good in the world. And I do, I want people to know that there's hope, there's positivity, there is a future for you, no matter how hard things get. Like, the seat that I'm sat in right now, I spent a year of my life sat here, you know, in a very, very dark place. And now I am full of light, I'm full of energy, I'm full of beans. Oh God, how corny. And it is possible. Recovery is totally possible. It just takes hard work. And if you think about it, you know, whether you've been in your eating disorder for 6 weeks or 60 years, you know, that's going to take a lot of readjusting. You know, if you've been in this for a long time, you've been very reliant on this, and that is totally okay. And removing something from your life, like an eating disorder, will create a bit of a black hole, but you have to refill that. You have to refill that with purpose, not with other obsessive traits. I mean, yes, as someone with ADHD, I probably have filled it with a new hobby and autism, a new special interest, but that's part of my nature and that's who I am. But it's not something that's negatively impacting me. In the episode last week, I spoke to Tallulah and we said, nourish or punish. Are you doing this to nourish or punish you? And it's the same respect to everything else, you know. Are you working like an absolute dog to nourish yourself or to punish yourself? Is checking off at 3 o'clock? Yeah, people might think that's bad, but if that's going to nourish you, then go do it. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. I really, really hope that you enjoyed it. And please let me know what you think to the solo episode as well, because it could be something I could do more of in the future. I think that's another sign that I am doing so much better as well, because I was like, no, I want to do that and I want to say what I want to say. Whereas before I'd be like, oh, who wants to hear what you have to say? So, yes. Thank you very much for listening. Have a lovely Christmas and Happy New Year. If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.